Hello, and welcome to another episode of Signals and Bits. Today, I'm talking to Manuel the Director of Silicon Marketing at Xilinx. Manuel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ben. It's an honor to be here. I'm pleased to be here and looking forward to a great conversation.
So Xilinx is obviously a powerhouse in the world of silicon, and your title is the Director of Silicon Marketing. Does that mean that you're responsible for all of the product families at Xilinx? What pieces of this do you work with?
Sure. So I have product line management responsibility for all silicon products, which basically means all those that have been launched, including some which like Versal, ACAP, which are currently in the beta program status. So there's also a group within Xilinx called product definition, and they're the ones that are actually working on defining the silicon that we're going to have, you know, 3 or 4 years down the pipe. So I work very closely with them and then make sure all the silicon that gets defined as it gets through the whole process of being designed, manufactured, and verified, making sure that those get launched and are successful in the market.
I see. So if something has been launched and is generally available to consumers, it's in your wheelhouse.
Correct.
All right. So you just mentioned Versal. There's a lot happening in the world of silicon right now, especially with the explosion of machine learning, is everyone is trying to figure out how can we meaningfully accelerate inference, right? You know, running a trained machine learning model. And in October of 2018, Xilinx announced Versal. That was the first public announcement, right?
Yes, that's right.
And I know there's a lot of new features there, but AI is a major component of that. So can you tell me a little bit more about Versal and what its goals are and what market you're hoping to serve with it?
Sure. Yeah, so like some of the other product families you've seen in the past, there are a lot of devices and a lot of combinations because we're trying to appeal to a broad set of markets and applications. And so Versal is no different. Versal actually has 6 series that comprise the entire family or portfolio of devices, as we like to call it. So the first is AI Core. And that's clearly one that's targeting cloud type applications, another type of AI inference applications, big iron, those types of things. There's also Prime. So Versal Prime is more of your typical FPGA type of application, but with a lot of the benefits that Versal brings to the table in terms of hardened IP, like the network on chip, hardened DDR, all those types of things. So those are the first two that we've already announced.
Ah.
There are 4 other series, which we've already announced at a very high level, which will be rolling out over the course of the next, honestly, 2 years. And so those include AI Edge, which is going to be targeted towards smaller, obviously, nodes at the edge, where power optimization, size, weight, and power, these types of things are going to be more critical.
Oh, interesting.
We're also going to roll out a family called Premium, or a series called Premium. Premium is going to be very high-end, think, you know, similar to what we had with Vertex, where you'd have higher speed transceivers, higher speed memory bandwidth. So very, very much at the very high end of the computing performance space. And then we'll also be rolling out AI RF, which will probably be of interest to a lot of your listeners, because that will be focused on taking RFSoC to the next level and incorporating a lot of the benefits of Versal ACAP, particularly around AI processing. And we also have a family called HBM, Versal HBM. So that's high bandwidth memory for extreme high bandwidth memory applications and requirements.
So you mentioned a couple of things there, and I kind of want to dive into them a little bit more and get a feel for what Xilinx's view is on this generally. So if we think about processing silicon in a spectrum kind of, and on one end are pure general purpose processors, think Intel CPUs or ARMs. And on the other end are very application specific things, ASICs, right? Application specific integrated circuits. And historically, right, somewhere in the middle is something like an FPGA that is purely programmable logic resources that, you know, is configurable based on your code. And you get something in between, you know, the flexibility of a GPP and the power efficiency and speed of an ASIC. But lately, we started to see Xilinx explore more devices that lean more towards the ASIC functionality side of things. And you mentioned, for example, putting a hard NOC, and here by NOC, you don't mean network operations center, you mean network on chip, a hard DDR. You mentioned RFSoC. So if you actually wouldn't mind explaining real quickly what RFSoC is, but then expand a little bit more on, are you continuing to move in the direction of sort of pulling in more application-specific hard IP into otherwise programmable devices? And what's the advantages of that?
Sure. So number of questions there. I'll go back up with RFSoC, just so your listeners get up to speed on that. So RFSoC is an existing family. There's actually two generations now that's out in the market. And the whole idea there was to take the FPGA and integrate for the first time ADDs and DACs. So that was really innovative in terms of being able to integrate multiple different types of what were previously discrete devices, and for size, weight, and benefit, power benefits, integrate them all into a single device.
So FPGAs have had ADCs and DACs for years, obviously, but they're generally low precision, low rate, not meant for radio communications. So here you've implemented what would have to have been discrete ADCs and DACs because of their speed.
Yep. So right? One of the major markets for RFSoC is 5G.
Ah.
So within a single device, we can handle all the sub 6 gigahertz 5G band classes, for example, and fully integrate all the digital front end into a single device, including the ADCs and DACs.
Got it.
So you then brought up another question around, okay, where is Xilinx on this continuum of, you know, general purpose processing versus more specific hardened processing? And, you know, the reality is we are in the middle, but we see this sweet spot where as we take things that normally in the previous generations you would have to have done in logic, but are always things that are required in a system. By being able to harden those things, we basically put in place a hardened infrastructure. And that infrastructure, generally customers don't want to have to deal with, but they've always had to. Our goal now is to minimize the effort that they have to spend on that infrastructure so that they can focus on their value add, which is the application. All those algorithm kernels, that's their gold. We want them to be able to get to market faster and not have to spend time focusing on how do I move data on the chip, within the chip, and off the chip.
Okay, so when you're using the word hardened here, you're not using it from the perspective of cryptographically hardened or even radiation hardened, but rather from the perspective of these are functions that customers would previously had to have used soft IP cores, something like generated from Xilinx right. Core Gen, to load into their designs, and Xilinx more or less realized that, okay, you know, a huge majority of our customers within certain application fields are having to do all of the same things. We might as well make them hard cores built into the silicon, and it'll be more efficient for us to do it that way anyway.
Correct. And that makes it more optimized. And it also makes it a lot easier to do things like place and route, because you no longer have to place and route a lot of this functionality, which was just infrastructure before. So, you know, the ease of use goes up, the time to market gets faster. And at the same time, you end up with something that is, while more optimized, still extremely flexible for the application.
So you mentioned something while you were talking about that. You said AI engines. So I know that's a major feature of Versal. So I'd like to dive a little bit more into what exactly that is. Presumably, it's an architecture for running inference, but what is its goal within the Versal part? Like, how is it built into the rest of the device?
Sure. So one thing I'll make clear, I talked earlier about there being six series within the Versal ACAP portfolio. Three of those, the ones that start with the terms AI, obviously have AI engines in them. There are three other series that I mentioned, Prime, Premium, and HBM. Those do not have the AI engines in them. So as you can see, we're not betting that everything is going AI. We have families that are going to support these AI engines. We're going to have families that also have DSP engines, but not the AI engines, which are going to be better optimized for applications that don't require inferencing, as an example, or advanced signal processing.
Okay, so AI engines are not universal to Versal.
Yeah, they're not everywhere. By the same token, you know, we have half of the portfolio focused on AI. So the AI engines themselves are a far more efficient way to essentially do advanced signal processing, linear algebra, and matrix math.
So things that have been important to radio for a long time and now underpin inference.
Those are the things, those are the types of operations and functions that the AI engines are optimized to do. They can support multiple different bit widths, fixed point and floating point. And of course, for AI inference, one of the sweet spots right now is, for example, 8-bit fixed.
Right.
So clearly, we've got some optimizations around that. But again, we have the flexibility to go wider if you need to go single position float, with the acknowledgement that in this application space, there are still so much evolution around the types of algorithms, around the types of neural networks that are being developed, that you can't just harden to that extent. So we still want to offer flexibility, but in a far more optimized processing way.
Right. So you don't want to lock yourself into current neural network architectures, and you want to be able to accommodate whatever comes down the road.
And that actually ties into the tools as well, because if you look at the data scientists, as an example, in the core network in the data center and how they want to do their programming, you know, they're writing C++, Python for their data flows. They're using tensors for TensorFlow, as an example. So the goal is not to say to them, okay, look, you know, just learn VHDL.
Right.
That's going to be a very difficult path. And so the path here is stick with the flows that you know, that you're familiar with. Work with TensorFlow as one of the options. And that will actually compile to the AI engines within seconds.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So one of the things I was going to ask you about is specifically the tooling for something like Versal. So you know, Xilinx has a little bit of a bad rap, I think, with engineers about the usability of its tools. And as the complexity of these devices, something like Versal grows, right? And now you have a very heterogeneous topology of processing elements within the same part. And it might not all even be doing the same, it might not all even be connected within the same data flow. The tooling becomes even more critically important to actually, you know, enabling the customer to actually make use of the device. So it sounds like you've thought about this from the perspective of how to use the AI engines, but how is Xilinx adapting or moving forward with its products like Vivado for actually, you know, Vivado HLS for making these things more accessible?
Yeah. So one of the goals with Versal ACAP, one of the things that from our view defines an ACAP is the ability to be fully software programmable.
Oh, that's interesting.
And by fully software programmable, that means no VHDL and no RTL required.
Oh, wow. Okay. So is that programming entirely from Vivado HLS from C++?
So the best way to think of it is multiple layers. And as a developer, you choose which layer you want to enter, you know, the tool flow from. So for example, of course, you know, there's VHDL experts that we know well and love and have always been able to support those folks with Vivado. And for those folks that want to go in and write VHDL, write RTL, optimize to the nth degree, some type of IP that's running in the adaptable engines, we support that.
Okay.
So all that is there and available for those types of hardware developers to develop their IP.
Right. So the RTL power programmer still has access to all of the tools that
Absolutely.
They're used to using.
Now, with you know, previous families that we've came out with, like Zinc and MPSoC, part of that was offering tools, the SDX tool set, as an example, that allowed them to start using OSs and real-time operating systems, drivers, other type of runtime software and libraries, and be able to program at that level. And you referenced earlier HLS, high-level synthesis. There's also part of the Vivado tool set that supports that and continues to support that by programming C. And then from that high-level abstraction, the tools will actually generate the underlying RTL that's required to support that. Now, there's also a new type of developer that we're targeting, right? The software framework type of developers that I mentioned that are used to doing C++ and Python, used to using TensorFlow and PyTorch and other types of tools like that. And so that's yet another layer where those folks can come in at that layer, go through our compiler and map to the Versal ACAP without having to touch any VHDL or RTL or program anything at that level. So essentially, we're offering options for software and hardware developers to enter at whatever level they're most comfortable with. And honestly, in many cases, it's entirely likely that you would have multiple developers on a project at different entry points, right? So you may have some IP that requires Vivado, and you're going to have a hardware developer do that. And then you're going to have folks writing AI algorithms. Okay, they're going to be doing that in TensorFlow, and that's the data flow and tool flow that they're going to be using for them to be optimal. And it will all come together within the tools, but we did not force any of them to use a tool set that they're uncomfortable with or not familiar with.
Interesting. So you're trying to make, really, you're trying to make the development tools that engineers and are used to using for whatever their field is. So machine learning engineers could use TensorFlow or Torch, and software engineers who are working at a higher level can use HLS. And all of that can be put into a Vivado design that an RTL engineer is then hacking on to optimize at a lower level. Like that, there's not separate tool flows here. This all comes together
Correct.
In one. And you could see from a single program sort of the entire FPGA
Yep.
image and layout.
Correct.
So that's extremely interesting to me from the perspective of heterogeneous computing, which is already the norm here, really, rather than the exception, especially if you consider how everyone's phone now, right, is a heterogeneous
Yes.
processing topology, right? And that trend is obviously reflected in Versal Mm-hmm. as well. So given all of the work that Xilinx has done in combining heterogeneous processing elements into single devices, I'm curious, what do you think's next and what are the unsolved challenges? What needs to be done to continue to push that kind of technology forward?
Well, the simplest answer I would have on that is all the things that I just talked about, I would not consider to be done. So, Versal ACAP is a very large portfolio of devices, of tools. All these things take time. The rollout of Versal is, it's not something that just happens overnight. So it's going to roll out over time with a variety of different devices and a variety of different tools. And so what I described earlier, you could think of as the vision. We're not there yet, but knowing what we needed to be successful with a series like Versal ACAP, we knew those were the challenges that we had to overcome, and we have the plans and the roadmap to overcome those. In terms of, beyond that, I think we've all agreed heterogeneous processors is the way to go at the moment, because there is no single processor that's ideally adapted to every single problem.
Right.
Given power constraints, size, weight constraints, et cetera. So the tools are going to be critical to that. And I think a big part of an area that we're focusing on as all that comes together is debug.
Oh, interesting.
Because as you mentioned, when you have all these different engines, how do you debug that at a system level? So again, it's something that we're addressing within the variety of tools that we're offering with Versal ACAP. But again, part of the understanding is, we're not there yet. It's going to take some time. And that is definitely an area that has to improve significantly in order for our vision to be realized. And we're going to continue to invest significantly in those areas, as well as other areas of the tools. At this point, I really see the tools being the biggest challenge that we have to address. And again, fortunately...
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yes. I mean... Look, silicon is a non-trivial problem, and we have amazing silicon at Xilinx. We've always known how to do amazing silicon with, leading-edge process technology. The tools have been one of the things that really, from my perspective, have been limiting our growth because, again, VHDL, Verilog, these are not programming languages that everyone comes out of, their electrical engineering program knowing how to do.
Very true.
Right. And so we have to learn, we have to adapt to reach more developers. We need to move into C, C++. HLS was a start. We now need to add frameworks, C++ and Python onto that. There may be something else in the future. We'll have to add to that. And so the challenge for us becomes basically moving from, a processor FPGA company to being what we call a platform company.
Huh.
And platform, meaning this combination of all the things that are required to make the system work together in harmony and allow the customer to get their end system up and running into market as quickly as possible. And the more of that platform we put together for them through these variety of tools, through the variety of IP that we have, both hard and soft, through things like evaluation kits. All these things lower the barrier so that our customers have less work to do to get to market faster, which is at the end of the day, our goal. But you know, that bar has increased over time. As we've gone to more heterogeneous systems, it's become more difficult. There's more moving parts in these platforms. And so all these things become more of a challenge in how do you make it all work together in a way that's easy for a customer to use and get to market.
Yeah. And that's actually a really interesting point. So you mentioned something earlier on, one of the features of Versal was the NOC, the network on chip. So as you know, I'm somewhat familiar with NOCs, and I'm curious, how does this work from the context of Versal, especially given the perspective that you just shared about, okay, you know, we have great processing elements within the device, but actually making use of them, which necessarily means moving data between them and deploying different IP cores around them, that could conceivably still be a really significant challenge, even if you figured out all the other pieces. And so the NOC, I'm assuming, is one of the key components of that. How does that get used within Versal? Is it one of those things that's just behind the scenes and a customer lays the RIP down and they don't have to, and they're not thinking about it? Or is it something that you're expecting customers to actively interact with or code against an interface for? Or really, how is that presented to a customer?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question, Ben. I actually think the NOC is something of a secret weapon for Xilinx. I think it's something that, you know, we are going to have to start more actively marketing and promoting because the value is tremendous. And it doesn't just get captured by the word network on chip. Because if you think about it, ASSPs and ASICs all have network on chips, don't they? You know, we have a network on chip too. So what's different about our network on chip, right? Well, if you look at the way ASSPs and ASICs have to solve their problem, they're solving very fixed, you know, problems. They're basically reducing the problem set and implementing it in a very fixed function way. When you do that, you define your network on chip in a fixed way.
Yep.
Right? Because you know what the data widths are going to be. You know what throughput you're going to have going from one engine to another heterogeneous processor. So all those things are, you know, optimized, but also fixed. And so you lose any value around flexibility and programmability.
Right. It's necessarily specific to the application specific circuit.
Our network on chip is very different because of the kinds of problems we're trying to solve and the flexibility and programmability that we're offering to customers. Our network on chip is programmable. So things like quality of service, latency, even data bit widths, those are things which you can program to support the application and the algorithms that you're running on Versal ACAP. That is a huge, huge differentiator. And of course, it's also significantly more optimal than having to build all that out of Fabric. And so the network on chip, actually, the way you have to think about it is at the start of developing the system, you really need to map out the entire application, the entire algorithms, the data flows between them, the bit widths, all these things, because you will have to program the NOC to support that. And the good news is it's just C programming. So standard compilation. We're not talking about any place and route.
So firmware.
But you do have to program it to make sure that you're not going to have latency issues, that you're not going to have performance issues or bottlenecks. And once you have that understanding of the system, you've programmed your NOC, then you go program the rest of the engines to support the data flow, which you've already mapped out.
That's interesting. Okay, so you mentioned earlier on that the NOC is hard. So it's a hard core. I don't know if calling it a core is the right thing, but it's a hard core on the device. But you're still, so it's not getting placed and routed,
correct,
like you just said, but it still requires some sort of firmware to be programmed into it based upon the rest of the
design. You program it.
And that's specifically for...
It has its own compiler, and you program it, but then you're actually essentially taking that IP and locking down the data flows and the movements so that you take advantage of the flexibility while using hard IP, if that makes sense.
So, yeah. So does the NOC make it easier for customer applications or customer designs to get, you know, mapped and placed and routed and to meet timing within the devices, because they're all, the compiler is connecting them all to the NOC rather than trying to figure out how to map them and place them to each other, how to map them and
connect
them to each other.
You've hit on one of the huge benefits, which I didn't bring up earlier, which is place and route. You do not have to place and route, obviously, the network on chip. It already exists. And then, you know, it basically sets up the optimal data paths and routes that are required, but you're not actually using routing in the adaptable hardware and the adaptable engines. And so from a place and route perspective, that's something that has always taken a long time. It's been a bit of a sore point. Having the network on chip significantly eases place and routing to heterogeneous processors. All you're doing is the place and routing within the adaptable engines. And then the network on chip takes care of the data movement to all other aspects of the device, all the I/O, all the other engines.
That's really cool. So the immediate knee-jerk response to how this could go wrong is, okay, that's going to introduce latency, right? So I have some high-speed DSP cores or DSP chain operating in the FPGA, and let's say I'm going out to DDR, but now I have to go to the NOC in between my chain or moving between blocks in this design. Does it meaningfully impact latency, or do the latency requirements of certain applications preclude use of the NOC? Like I'm thinking about things like meeting the 10 microsecond SIFS of LTE, right, for example.
Yeah, so that's a very good question. In most cases, what I would say is latency will be improved because we've hardened the IP. We basically, you can think of it as we've paved these super highways, which allow for a lot of data to be moved very quickly. And it can be done in a way where you don't have, don't have to deal with arbitration. You don't have to deal with blocking. All that is programmed up front, so you don't have those issues. It has a high-speed interconnect directly to the DDR memory controllers, which are hardened, directly to the PCIe controllers, which are hardened, directly to the multi-rate Ethernet MAC, which is hardened.
Oh, that's nice.
Directly to the encryption cores, which are hardened. So you have a very high-speed interconnect to all those things. Now, we still have, of course, place and route and, various size routes within the fabric as well. So as an example, things that we can support because of that is a massive amount of throughput to the AI engines.
Huh.
So yes, you can use the network on chip to move data between the adaptable engines and the AI engines. But there may be times where you need more throughput, or you're trying to take advantage of a different memory hierarchy, where you might want to take advantage of BRAMs and Ultra RAMs within the adaptable engines, because that's what's going to get you the fastest, and most throughput to the AI engines. In those cases, you can set up those direct links using AXI, just like previous generations of Xilinx MPSoC devices, to maximize the throughput even beyond what the network on chip can offer and at lower latency. So again, you have options. Network on chip is a wonderful way to do it that's very efficient and low power, but you also have all the routing, all the AXI buses throughout the fabric to also have at your disposal for your application.
I see. Okay, that's interesting. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about a couple of other topics. So one of them being RISC-V. So there's a lot of growing momentum behind the RISC-V movement, a lot of excitement about it in the research community. Has Xilinx looked at RISC-V at all? Do you have any thoughts about its goal, where it's going to go?
Sure. So I have no responsibility for RISC-V, but what I can say is Xilinx is aware of it. We've looked at it. We're supportive of it, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we want to have as many options for customers as possible. And clearly that's a good one. It's an open source option, so that makes it attractive to a certain set of customers. We're supportive of that. We also have, of course, ARM cores, which are hardened. There are also things like soft ARM Cortex M3 cores, which you can build out of fabric. There are also the Microblaze cores that you can build out of fabric. And RISC-V we see as yet another option to give customers the most flexibility and be able to benefit the most from things like code portability, with the type of processors and architectures that they're most familiar with.
Okay. So you just mentioned open source, which I want to talk about a little bit more. It, you know, there is no longer any disagreement about the success of open source, but it's been a and despite its huge success in the general software world, it's been something of a struggle when it comes to things like programmable devices and ASICs, due in large part to the nature of, you know, the tool chains have to be vendor specific for the most part, or historically have had to be vendor specific. You know, IP core licensing, the way the licenses work, sort of pivot on the mechanisms of software, which don't necessarily map well into programmable logic. And so Xilinx has made some overtures into open source, like the Pink device, which was, you know, fully programmable little hobbyist board. I think that you could program through Python, actually, if I'm remembering correctly. So does Xilinx have further plans regarding open source at this point going forward, especially with all of the tool chain updates that you've been talking about? Is it a priority for Xilinx, and what role is open source going to play for you going forward?
Yeah. So again, I'm not the best person to talk to about these topics, but what I can say is Xilinx is supportive of open source. We have a GitHub. We've even hosted code that we developed with NI and Edis Research with a previous challenge, as you're aware of. So we already have a lot of support for open source. We also have within the CTO organization now a focus and folks that are actually spending time dedicated to open source. We also have efforts underway with the Linaro organization, which is supporting open source on ARM.
Right, the embedded group.
So I think Xilinx has seen the inevitability of open source. We're supporting it. I think it's something that's going to become more important in the future. Obviously, I don't know what all the Xilinx plans are around open source, but I'm quite confident that you'll see things like IP, other types of software libraries that are being open sourced from Xilinx and also supported by Xilinx to make sure that the open source community can benefit and work on Xilinx devices, including Versal ACAP, but other devices as well.
Yeah, it strikes me as, you know, as we were talking through the changes to the tool chain and the sort of the different levels that you can jump in on an FPGA design now, whether you're a machine learning engineer or an application designer, you know, machine learning engineers and software engineers have been using open source for years. And in some cases, you know, they're like machine learning is a great example, actually, because every major framework is entirely open source. Like all machine learning engineers, for the most part, are doing all of their work using open source tools and frameworks and libraries. So if Xilinx is making it possible for machine learning engineers to use the tools that they're already using and have that compiled down directly into your devices, you're effectively making it possible for people to use open source tools and compile them down into programmable logic. So yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm excited to see what comes out of that moving ahead. And it's actually a good segue to one other question I wanted to ask you. In STEM education, FPGAs have often been seen as being too complex. As these tools are evolving and as things are changing, that seems like it's evolving in with it. And we are seeing companies like Analog Devices, for example, with their Pluto device that are specifically, I mean, that device is really geared very well for students. And they're putting a lot of investment into trying to make it accessible and available to students. So I'm curious for your thoughts on how, is there a parallel to that with FPGAs? You know, are the tools and accessibility improving enough on programmable logic devices such that they could be used more efficiently for STEM?
So if you look at the vision I painted earlier around tools, I would say absolutely, right? So the goal is people can take, you know, TensorFlow, PyTorch, those types of tools. People can take C code and be able to run those without having to have any expertise in VHDL, without having to be hardware experts. So that's absolutely the vision we're going to. Again, you know, we're certainly not there yet. It's a journey. We're making a lot of investments to get there. And I think there are exciting times ahead. At the moment, I would say, you know, you look at some of the success we've had with Vivado HLS. I think those types of tools already successful, already available in the market today, are a very good way for students to get excited around FPGAs with regards to STEM. Being able to use lower cost Spartan evaluation platforms and kits, that gives them a basis upon which to use programming languages that they're familiar with and not have to understand the details of the architecture. I think a lot of the tools we have today are already a big step forward in improving that, but it's only going to get better once we have support for standard frameworks. Then it'll just be so much more, it'll be so much easier, more accessible. And so that's something that, we're looking forward to in the fairly near future.
Okay, fantastic. So those are all the questions I had for you. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I hope your listeners get some benefit out of this. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Signals and Bits continues to evolve, Ben.
Thanks so much, Manuel. This has been another episode of Signals and Bits. Thanks so much for listening, and come back for the next interview.